What happens when an entire family comes out? It's not the most common experience, but it's what happened to technology writer Jessie Hempel. By the time she became an adult, Jessie had come out as a lesbian, her siblings as bi and trans, her father as gay, and her mother as a trauma survivor. Jessie is the host of the award-winning podcast Hello Monday and a senior editor-at-large at LinkedIn. She's turned her life experience into a moving memoir called The Family Outing, and she joins us today to share five of her key insights.
Hi, I'm Jessie Hempel, host of LinkedIn's flagship editorial podcast, Hello Monday. And I've just published a memoir. It's called The Family Outing. 2 decades ago, in the space of 5 years, every member of my family came out. I was first. On the way home from college at 19, I told my parents that I was gay. A couple years later, my dad came out, or rather, he was kicked out of the closet when my sister discovered his infidelity. She was coming to terms with her own bisexuality at the time. Then my youngest sibling called to tell me he was transgender. As my parents' marriage fell apart, my mother found voice to come out as a survivor, someone who was involved with a serial killer. As my parents' marriage fell apart, my mother found voice to come out herself, this time as a survivor, as someone who had been involved with a serial killer. This was a painful decade in my family's history, but it had an unexpected outcome. Before this outing, we didn't like each other all that much or know each other all that well. Things were hard. As a result of this work, we have grown close. We are a family who knows, loves, and accepts each other. I've spent most of my career writing about technology and business for magazines like Fortune and Wired, but during the pandemic, I turned on my recorder and I interviewed my parents and my siblings. I wanted to understand what happened to my family when we each endeavored to live more authentically. I called this process The Project, and it became a book, The Family Outing. Here are 5 insights that emerged from my work. Number 1, memory is unreliable. Even when all 5 members of my family tried in earnest to remember the events of our family life and align on our stories, nothing matched. That's because we each encode memories differently, and those memories have changed in the telling and retelling. So when we can't agree on what happened, it doesn't necessarily mean anyone is wrong. For example, nearly 3 years after my parents' marriage first came apart, they still hadn't divorced. My siblings and I remember scheduling a conference call to tell them we felt they should get the paperwork done already, fully separate their lives, move on. Evan remembers the empty college dorm room he was sitting in during his school break. Katya remembers taking the call from the bedroom of my house. I can even sort of hear the surprise in my dad's voice when he picks up and discovers all 3 of us, his kids, are on the line. As we remember it, we told them we thought they should just get a divorce already and move on. But neither of my parents has any memory of this call. Upon reflecting, this makes sense to me. Our parents' marriage was never about us. It was about them. So our opinions of when it should end weren't central to them like they were to us. Now, throughout my reporting, people's memories clashed. Mom remembered a dinner in 1989 that Dad was certain happened in 1982 and that I couldn't place at all. It was only when I let go of needing to be certain about the factual truth that I became open to a deeper, more collective experience. When I really listened to everyone, an emotional truth emerged. Although there are some things in this book that not everyone remembers, everyone agrees that this story represents the emotional truth, and that we're now clear that this is what is important. Number 2, when someone tells you who they are, listen. Often when the people with whom we are closest, family members, for example, or close friends, when they share new information with us, we feel threatened. It causes us to question our own identity, to ask ourselves how we missed something so fundamental about a person we love. It's important to exercise some self-compassion here. This is normal. We're human. But we can strive to show up differently. Consider the phone call my brother made to tell me he was trans. I had been out of the closet for 50 years by then. I considered myself to be a progressive person and had friends who were transgender. But when Evan told me that he was a boy, I didn't let him finish his sentence before I dismissed what he was telling me. "I just saw you over the holidays and you were wearing that long, flowy dress," I told him. Looking back, I regret this. I wish I had made more space to listen to him in those moments, to hear what he was trying to tell me. Now, when someone reveals something to me and I don't know what to say, I aspire to embrace three words. Tell me more. When I don't know what to say, I just keep listening. Number three, center other people's experiences. Nearly half of the story in my book occurs before my brother comes out as transgender. He is a character, and sometimes even the central character. Yet during this time in our lives, my own memory casts him as a little girl. Thinking back, I remember that the idea of being the oldest of three daughters was central to my identity. It defined how I thought about myself. I wondered, how could I write about this honestly? What did that even mean? I perceived this to be a conundrum, and I tried to ask my brother to solve it. I didn't plan to use his dead name, which is the name he was given at birth and chose to give up when he came out. I didn't want to refer to him wrongly. But how was I supposed to navigate the moments when my memory conflicted with his experience? My brother didn't see this as a problem. "I'm Evan," he told me. "Write about me as Evan." "You mean as a boy?" I asked. And he had every right to be frustrated with me when I asked this question. But instead, he was gentle with me. "Yes, write about me as who I am, who I'm telling you I always was." So I tried it. I began to center my brother's experience. I wrote about the child Evan was, the creative and stubborn and persistent first grader who grew into a withdrawn and pragmatic adolescent. As I wrote about my brother with the pronouns he chose, centering the experiences he identified as important, an unexpected thing began to happen for me. I began to see him more clearly for who he was. I began to understand him differently, and also to know him better. My takeaway? I've spent a lifetime centering my own experiences in life, exploring my own perspectives. But new truths open up when I center other people's experiences, when I attempt to imagine life as they experience it. Number four, show up. My father's first husband, Ron, was a beating heart inside a bear of a body. Everybody loved him because he was so good at loving everyone. He'd been diagnosed with HIV in 1987 when it was a death sentence, but he'd survived. He eventually succumbed to cancer in 2009, but his life felt like a miracle. He never lost sight of the preciousness of each day. Not long after Dad and Ron married, my mom's sister died unexpectedly. I was around 30. My siblings and I had had a difficult relationship with Mom's sister, and neither of them planned to fly out to Illinois for her funeral. I wasn't really sure what I should do. I didn't have much vacation at my magazine's job, and my paycheck wasn't huge. The plane ticket would cost $500, about half of my savings at the time. I explained all of this to Ron and Dad. "What should I do?" I asked them. "Should I go?" "Oh, there's no question here," Ron replied. "You sit next to your mom at her sister's funeral." Their response was so simple, and the sentiment was so clear. Show up. I paid $520 for that ticket, and I have never missed that money, nor do I remember. And I have never missed that money, nor do I remember what assignment I might have been working on at the magazine. I have never regretted sitting next to my mom at her sister's funeral. When it comes to the people who are closest to us, we rarely regret showing up. Number five, put your own life jacket on first. Earlier, I mentioned a conference call in which my siblings and I call our parents to ask them to divorce. At least, that's how I remember it at first. While I'm working on the book, I stumble across an academic book I'd forgotten about. It's called Families Like Mine, Children of Gay Parents Tell It Like It Is. It was published in 2004, just a couple years after the conference call. The author, Abigail Garner, interviews both me and Katya for this book. I tell her about the conference call. I'm 27 at the time, recalling something from just a few years earlier. And here's my quote, just as it's published. "We called them on a conference call. We told them, we are your children and we need to make a few things clear. We can't take on your burdens. We need to know you are okay. We think you should divorce and we know it will be on your time. We don't want to know the axis of your crisis. We just need to know you're okay. We want to know you have good therapists, but we really can't deal." The small piece of my personal history preserved is a gift. When people we love go through hard times, like my parents, we often want to make things better for them. We usually can't. This is even more true when those people are our parents, our children, our siblings. Often the only thing we can do is love them enough to maintain our own boundaries so that when they emerge, we aren't so angry at them and broken by them that we cannot be in relationship with them. In this passage, I can see what I didn't remember, that our call was not, in fact, to tell our parents to divorce. It was to tell them how to treat us, where we belong in their lives, what roles we are willing to play. It doesn't matter now that they cannot remember it. It doesn't even matter that we cannot. At that vulnerable moment in our family's history, my sister, my brother, and I took care of ourselves instinctively. This is a way that we took care of them. I'm Jesse Hempel. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll check out the book.
Thank you, Jesse. That was Jesse Hempel with five key insights from The Family Outing, a memoir. You might also enjoy our book bite for Alexi Pappas' memoir, Bravey, Chasing Dreams, Befriending Pain, and Other Big Ideas. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.